Good afternoon, everybody. Afternoon, Anna. Afternoon, Catherine, Deb, Dominic, Amanda, Joe, Lucas, Michael. Oh, I can't keep up with everybody that's coming. Hi, Serena. Hi, Yvette. Hi, Scott. Hello, everybody. If you're here, come and say hello in the chat box. That would be fantastic if you pop over and say hello over there. Oh, hello there, Serena. Hi, Deb. Hi, Yvette. Hi, Caroline. Hi, Scott. Hi, Joe. Hi, Lynn. Hi, Amanda. Hi, Angela. Hi, Natalia. Yes, lovely to see you here again. Hi, Anna. Hi, Amanda. Hi, Salma. Nice to have you with us. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Again, we are practically up to capacity in terms of registrations today. So I'm just going to give it another 30 or so seconds to let everybody come through. Hello there, Chris. Lovely to have you with us. Hi there, Leanne. Nice to have you with us as well. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Love it. Okay, let's just see what time we are on. If we look like we're getting high there through. Hello there, everybody. Okie dokie. I think we are probably just about there for everybody who's going to be coming in and joining us live today. So welcome, welcome, welcome to you all. It is fantastic to have you here with us. We are here. This is day four of Safeguarding Adults Week, and today we are looking at some of the types of harm affecting 15 to 25 year olds. This is an overview. We are not going to go into great, great detail on each of these areas. I have selected a few for us to have a little closer look at, but there is, we just simply, if I'm being absolutely honest, we don't have time to go into all of these particular areas. In fact, each and every one of them could be an entire day's training on their own. And certainly I've run a number where we have just dealt with a particular area for an entire day. So we simply just don't have time to go into absolutely everything. But the aim is to give you an overview today of the sorts of types of harm that can affect 15 to 25 year olds and the sorts of things that you need to be keeping a watchful eye out for when you're working with this age range. So as with all of the webinars this week, I would ask you to try and move yourself somewhere quiet. I am going to be giving you a lot of information as I have been doing throughout. But for me, it's really important that you are somewhere where you can take this in. If you're next to a ringing phone, that's not going to be particularly helpful. Equally, if you are somewhere where somebody is making an awful lot of phone calls or having another conversation, that might be quite difficult. So try and find somewhere quiet, and use headphones is often quite a good idea as well. If you have a question, and I'm encouraging questions throughout these webinars, the best way is either to use the chat function and put a Q at the start of your question, or use the Q&A facility that is part of Zoom. We will have a 50-minute Q&A at the end. So if I don't get through the questions as we're working through, then I will look at answering those when we get to the end of the presentation. The easiest way, if there is something you want to share, is actually not to put your hand up, but really rather just to alert me in the chat box or in the Q&A function. The chat box is slightly more private because the only person you're telling is me, whereas the Q&A, others can see the questions that you are asking. So be aware of that. So for those of you who haven't been with me all week, for those of you who have, thank you so, so much. But for those of you for whom this is the first time we are meeting in this virtual space, my name is Kate Young, and I am a former now non-practicing child protection solicitor, and I have over 20 years experience working across a variety of areas within the child protection sector. I'm also the founder of the Safeguarding Association and the host of the now annual Global Safeguarding Summit as well. So what do the Safeguarding Association do? Well, we are specialists in supporting professionals, particularly safeguarding professionals who work with 15 to 25 year olds. We have our own membership hub where we have monthly training sessions, monthly meetings, and lead safeguarding professionals are able to book in one-to-ones with me as well. We provide training and also consultancy support for those working with that particular age range as well. So that is me. Okay, let us begin. It's worthwhile taking a moment to just remind ourselves when we're talking about the types of harm what we are talking about here. Now remember, there is no absolute criteria when we're judging what significant harm is, remembering that significant harm is the test under the Children Act 1989 for when local authorities are seeking to become involved in a young person's life. So here, those up to the age of 18 is what we are talking about here. You are looking at the severity and extent of the abuse, whether there's any premeditation, are there threats or coercion? And remember, it could be a single incident. It doesn't have to be a build-up of incidences. A single incident could often be enough, depending on what it is, to get you over that threshold of what significant harm is. And remember, it does include hearing domestic abuse as well. So really what we're talking about here when we think about harm is something that prevents somebody from developing the way they could or should. When we talk about much younger children, it's about things that prevent them from meeting their developmental milestones. So this age range, it's actually things that, yes, there are still developmental milestones, but also things that will prevent them or hinder them from actually turning into the best human beings that they can be. So let's bear this in mind as we work through to this afternoon. Now, those of you who were on the training Tuesday will possibly remember this as our framework for the cycle. And the reason I'm showing this is that the reason this is so important, the reason that we need to be mindful of the different types of harm is this bit, because this here, spotting the harm, is the bit that actually starts the whole process off. It's the bit that can open the door to a whole host of support, intervention for that young person in order to help them deal with whatever it is that they are dealing with. In child protection processes, this is for the up to 18, it can open the door to universal services, to extra family support, things like that, that could really make an enormous difference. So the reason spotting the harm is so very, very crucial is that if you don't do anything about it, nothing else is likely to happen. You can't rely on somebody else to take a step, because you can't guarantee that somebody else has seen what you have seen and has made the connections that you have made. What then are the different types of harm? I've put some in this list here, but in the chat, I would like you to write down and tell me what are some of the types of harm that you have come across, because this list, I promise you, is not at all exhaustive. It really is not. These are simply, as awful as it is, the highlights of the different types of harm that can befall a young person. So what are you aware of that isn't on this list? Let me know in the chat. What are some of the types of harm that you have come across? And I'm going to take a quick slurp of coffee while you are writing in the chat box. Yep. Oh, that's interesting. So rape, digital self-harm, bite marks, neglect, mental neglect, emotional abuse. Neglect. Yeah, so stabbing, physical harm, group harm. What do you mean by group harm? Just drug misuse, yes, substance misuse. Okay. So like a pact. Isolation, false imprisonment. Yeah. So you'll see what I have done, and quite deliberately so, is I have missed off the top six types of harm. Now, I call them the top six types of harm because in terms of child protection, they are the main types of harm upon which a local authority will hang its case. So here I'm talking about physical harm, emotional harm, sexual harm, psychological harm, neglect, and also financial harm as well. Remembering that financial harm also falls within domestic abuse. So those are the six areas upon which a local authority, certainly the top five, maybe not the six tends to fall later on. But those are, the main types of harm that a local authority will hang its case upon, where there may be other things that are going on. So what we are going to do is take a bit of a closer look at some of these types of harm. Now, I am deliberately not touching mental health. The reason for that is really straightforward. It is an enormous issue. And I cannot even begin to do it justice with those are the types of harm that are there. But you also, as well, with mental health, one of the things that can happen is that we get caught up in somebody being ill with mental illness, and we see that as a safeguarding issue. It isn't necessarily a safeguarding issue. Just because somebody has a diagnosed psychosis doesn't mean it's a safeguarding issue. It will only become a safeguarding issue if they then become a harm to themselves or others because they're not managing their situation. So that you have that issue. And also where you have a situation whereby you have suicidal ideation with an intent to complete suicide or not, and also self-harm as well. So just be aware that just because somebody is mentally unwell does not mean that they are necessarily a safeguarding risk to themselves or others. You will need to make sure you're taking appropriate advice around that. Maybe look at your mental health teams or your crisis teams that are available to you in that area. Leanne, can you just pop in the chat which four areas you've been asked to comment on. I think I know which ones you mean, but I just want to double check what you've been asked to do at conference. That would be lovely. Thank you. Okay. So let us take a look at the first type of harm. Now, unsurprisingly for some, I've started with domestic abuse. For those of you who did the training on Monday or Wednesday morning, I shared a statistic around domestic abuse. So of the 1.2 million domestic abuse cases that occur every year, the greatest group at risk of domestic abuse are women aged 16 to 24. That is right within this age group. And the definition, this is a government definition, the age was reduced from 18 to 16. So what we have here is the agreed version of the definition of domestic abuse, which is great because for a number of years we have been working on a situation whereby lots of different agencies were working on their own definition of domestic abuse. We now have a holistic and cohesive definition of domestic abuse. So this is any incident of controlling, coercive or threatening behaviour, violence or abuse between those aged 16 or over who are or have been intimate partners or family members, regardless of their gender or sexuality. So this is more than partner on partner. This may be brother on father. It may be daughter on brother. It could be of other close family members as well. So it is a much broader definition than was previously in place. Is this a new definition to any of you? Let me know in the chat box. Or are you familiar with this definition? Is there anything in there that surprises you? Brilliant stuff. Just to answer your question, Leanne, have they been increased or never been asked to consider a case based on four types of harm? Physical, emotional, sexual neglect. Financial is the one that has been introduced, and emotional and psychological tend to get lumped together, although they are slightly different. So that'll be why you've had those four types rather than the six that were there. Okay, so that is domestic abuse. I could talk for days about domestic abuse because it is something that we're always learning about, and there is likely to be an enormous amount of research comes out of this particular circumstance. We do know that within the first 3 weeks of lockdown this year, there were 16 domestic abuse related deaths, including two children. That figure has risen again. So this is an enormous area, absolutely enormous area. And more recently, you'll have seen in the press, the police officer who was on trial for killing his partner and didn't quite get the sentence that people thought he should have received. So I think that is currently being reviewed at the moment. So it is always something, there is never a day goes by when there isn't some form of domestic abuse of some form in the press. So the next type of harm we're going to have a look at is gangs. Now, I have taken this definition from the Metropolitan Police, who've done an awful lot of work on this. If you were part of the Safeguarding Summit, you'll have heard Sheldon Thomas talk on this area. If you weren't part of it, the summit site is about to have all of the videos placed in there. So if you do want access to them, then the best way to get that is to make sure you stay on our emailing list, because then I will tell you when those videos are up and ready for you to watch, if that's something you want to do. So the Met Police define a gang as a relatively durable, predominantly street-based group of young people who see themselves and are seen by others as a discernible group and engage in a range of criminal activity and violence. They may also have any or all of the following features. They may lay claim over territory or identify specifically with a particular territory, have some form of identifying structure feature, and are in conflict with other similar gangs. And this definition is distinct from and should not be confused with other criminal structures such as organised crime networks. So I certainly can think of a number of issues that arise with this. The TV is rife with glamorising various gangs, Peaky Blinders being one of many that have done so. But if you know the history behind the Peaky Blinders, it is absolutely horrific. This is an enormous, enormous issue. Absolutely enormous issue. I learned at our Global Safeguarding Summit that gang violence worldwide is to blame for significantly more deaths than terrorism. That is enormous. So it is a huge, huge issue for our young people as well. And if you think about the sorts of ways that young people can become involved in gangs, it is having that connectivity. It's having that recognition. It's being part of a community that identifies in a very similar way. They don't necessarily have stability within the family home, and so they have found stability of some sort within the gang structure, and they've got people there that they look up to and admire within that particular structure. Next, exploitation. And I've put this into two parts for you, because exploitation, we talk about child exploitation being criminal or sexual. And also for this particular age range, as much as we are looking at victims here, for this age range, you need to be aware as well that whilst they may be victims, you may also find that this age range become perpetrators, either victim turned perpetrator, or they are perpetrators themselves coercing younger people in. So the definition, the government definition of child sexual exploitation, is that it occurs where an individual or group takes advantage of an imbalance of power to coerce, manipulate or deceive a child or young person under the age of 18 into sexual activity. And this is the crucial bit, either in exchange for something the victim needs or wants, and or for the financial advantage or increased status of the perpetrator or facilitator. And what is also very important to remember, which I know causes a huge amount of controversy for some people, and particularly when we think about the age of consent in this country, that the victim could have been sexually exploited even if it appears consensual. So even if the victim says, "I agreed to it," doesn't necessarily mean that they were actually consenting to it. This is a really difficult area on technicalities to deal with, certainly for those who are in law enforcement and who are trying to navigate this particular situation. So it's really important that you don't just take somebody's word at face value where you worry about this, because if there's one person there, there's likely to be at least another two or three involved. And it is not unknown. And in fact, this was what was happening within Rotherham and Rochdale and Telford and all of those places, where the young people who were being exploited then became the exploiters, and were pulling in other young people and being groomed and being exploited sexually that way. This doesn't necessarily include peer-on-peer abuse, although I think what you've got to be careful of is that you don't turn this into peer-on-peer abuse. With peer-on-peer abuse, you're looking at two people of roughly the same age, where there is abuse from one to the other. So it can be, but what there usually isn't are either of these two factors. So you usually don't have an exchange of value So I will sleep with you if you give me that 50 quid, or I will sleep with you if you give me those drugs, or the financial advantage. So for those of you who've heard any of the victims talk and have read any of the serious case reviews, trigger warning, but it was not uncommon for those who were being exploited to basically be locked in a room, and there were men after man being sent in. Now, those men were paying for the benefit of having sex with the person that was in the room, whether or not they wanted it. So that was the financial advantage. Also, the increased status as well. That generally isn't a factor in peer-on-peer abuse. So that's one of the differences between them. Now, turning to criminal exploitation, this is where, again, you've got that imbalance of power. So it's where an individual or group takes advantage of an imbalance of power to coerce, control, manipulate or deceive a child or young person under the age of 18. They may have been criminally exploited even if they appear to have agreed to it. Doesn't always involve physical contact, and it can occur through the use of technology. So it could be, and the example they give here is working on cannabis farms or to commit theft. See this a lot with county lines as well, where young people are exploited to travel across various routes in order to deliver or collect contraband, whether it's illegal substances, whether it's weapons, or anything else for that matter, if there is to be a gain by those who are causing the child to be taken across those lines or to commit those particular acts. The likelihood is as well that the young person won't want to give up who they were working for. They'll take it all on their own shoulders, even if you don't believe a word that they are saying. The chances are, at some level, they are terrified more of the consequences from the gang or those who are exploiting them than they are of being sent to a youth offending institute or to prison. That is the power that is held over these particular young people. And they, if they're involved in criminal exploitation or any form of exploitation, moving them is not going to help, because all that will do is widen whoever it is that is exploiting them. It will widen their network. And it may even mean that they are being moved to another area where they will end up in conflict with another group that is organising deliveries and working in that particular area. So moving somebody who's being exploited has to be done very, very carefully. Otherwise, you can place the child at risk of further harm as well. Now, let's have a look at bullying. Now, this includes cyberbullying, and this is simply the definition. There isn't a legal definition of bullying, but it's normally defined as behaviour that's repeated, intended to hurt someone, often aimed at certain groups. Usually there is a motive behind it, so race, religion, gender, sexual orientation. It could be physical assault, teasing, making threats, name calling, and bullying online, be it through groups, be it through gaming, be it through social networks, be it through WhatsApp, Messenger, and other sites like that. It can be very, very difficult to ascertain who it is. If it's online, that can be very difficult to get to the root of that. But it's why it's so important that we know who our children and people are actually talking to when they are online as well. So that is in an educational setting. But given the age range we're talking about, I just wanted to include workplace, because lots of you work with apprentices, lots of you work with those who are perhaps doing part-time jobs as well. So in the workplace, again, bullying isn't illegal, but harassment is. And it could be harassment in relation to age, sex, disability, their marriage or civil partnership, whether they're pregnant, whether they're, it's their race, their disability, religion or belief or sexual orientation. All of these are protected by the Equality Act. These are protected characteristics by the Equality Act. But I also wanted to mention in this particular area, the act of hazing or some form of initiation into the workplace. Because as much as we are in 2020, I keep hearing stories where young people are going in as apprentices to wherever they are. And on the enrollment, everything is fine. Attending class is fine. But when they're on the shop floor, as it were, there is a hazing ritual. And one of the ones I heard was a young person who was actually quite reserved, really good at what they did, but were obviously learning. And the entire crew that they worked with, including the manager, wrapped this poor young lad up in cling film and left him and laughed at him. Now, that is not really what we want to be happening in our workplaces. And also, the impact of that on that young person is that he's unlikely to trust his line manager if anything is going awry or is actually not feeling particularly comfortable, because his line manager was complicit in what was happening. And I wholly agree, Caroline, it is shocking. But it happens. And these were organisations where they said none of this happened. And this came out after a training session where that young person felt empowered enough by the training session to say to the trainer, this is what had happened and this was what was going on. This wasn't necessarily known to the HR team. When it was told to HR, then things were taken. But this was a really ingrained act. It was a really ingrained kind of mindset within that particular workforce that this is what you have to do. It is reminiscent of stuff that used to happen when my dad, who is now in his mid-70s, started out as a lad on the shop floor in the steelworks. That sort of thing going on. It wasn't right then. It's absolutely not right now. So just make sure that you know what's happening on the shop floor where you've got apprentices. Lastly, I wanted to raise the issue of self-neglect, because this comes up more and more. And in particular, it comes up with those who are living on their own, potentially, or those who are living, well, actually, they could be living anywhere, frankly. It comes up a lot in higher education, this issue. So what we have here, SCIA.org, which I think I've mentioned previously, they are a brilliant, brilliant resource for things like this to get some more information. And their definition is that it's a lack of self-care to an extent that it threatens personal health and safety. It's neglecting to care for one's personal hygiene, health or surroundings, and it's an inability to avoid harm as a result of self-neglect, failure to seek help or access services to meet health and social care needs. So, for example, not attending doctor's appointments even though they're poorly, not attending dental appointments even though they've got really bad rotten teeth, not having a shower, not having a bath, not washing their clothes or cleaning their teeth. Not washing their hair. And there are two main types of self-neglect. So you have the intentional self-neglect. So you know exactly what you're doing. You just can't be bothered doing it. So you're making that conscious choice. So that may be the example that you know you're poorly. You know you need to go to the doctor, but you're not going to go. Or you have the unintentional self-neglect. Now, that unintentional self-neglect is where there are there may be something else going on that is preventing them from accessing that support. So maybe there is a health issue, maybe there is a disability, a learning disability that is causing them to just not be able to do what it is they need to do to look after themselves. But again, somewhere like the Anne Craft Trust, again, who started the Safeguarding Adults Week, are a font of knowledge where it comes to those with disabilities, and certainly those who work with people who are older as well. So if you're working with much older people, they are a great source of information as well for you. That concludes our presentation for today. So the person, the organisation that deals with the older age range is the Anne Craft Trust, AnnCraft Trust. They deal with older people and have some great information, particularly around these sorts of issues. They are really good there. Okay, it is now over to you. The floor is yours. And let me know, what questions have you got? Because that was a very, very swift overview of the main types of harm. They're picked on the areas that I come in and came into contact with this particular age range on a much greater level than some of the others. So I'm going to stop sharing. And feel free to pop your questions either in the Q&A box or in the chat box. And I will see them in there. So over to you, lovely, lovely people. Let me know what's burning. What questions have you got around this? Or have I stunned you into silence with this information? Let's have a look. Anything I've missed? Having a look. Ask away. If I don't know, I'll be honest and tell you. Let me know if there's anything that is making you curious or oh, you're very welcome, Amanda. Yeah, I don't think I've heard the term self-neglect before. It's something that it's been around for a while, however, it's taken a while to come into to kind of common or more common language within the safeguarding world. It was definitely something that has been around for quite a while when you're talking with older people and those with learning disabilities or cognitive issues. So it can be a whether it's a mental health concern or something else. So it's been around for a while, but it's only fairly recently that we talk about it in terms of this sort of age range, and particularly it's come up around those who are in higher education who may be struggling and who may be making either a conscious choice or an unconscious choice. Usually it's a conscious choice to do that, and it can be a really complex area to get your head around. So if you're not sure, then flag it and speak to somebody around it, because there can be some complicated mental health issues tied into it as well. Yes, county lines, absolutely, Natalia. I haven't included county lines because of the age range we're talking about. Generally speaking, and this is a massive generalisation, County Lines happens much younger. So you get those between sort of 10 and 14 who are then coerced into engaging. And in fact, we had a really tragic case a couple of years ago. There was a recent series case review in relation to him. A young boy who was found, I want to say, in the Dorset, Devon area. No good explanation as to why he was there at all. And he was transported back to the London area. And unfortunately, he was killed. And what the series case review pulled out was that the local, whoever was transporting him, whilst they'd done what the best they could, actually there were further questions they should have asked in relation to why he was there, to have been able to pass better information on when they got across back to the London area. But absolutely, I don't disagree that there can be cuckoo and going if there is a level of vulnerability there. Absolutely. That is definitely something you need to be considering as well if things are going on like that. What about a young child who lives with a parent who indulge in excessive alcohol and still wants to live with them? So you're talking about the parents are indulging in excessive alcohol or the child is indulging in excessive alcohol? Two slightly different issues there. Oh, Serena, thank you. Oh, bless you. So the parent, well, in which case you're going through child protection processes. If you're noticing that, then I'd be making a referral. The child may want to live there, but ultimately that's not your decision. If you've spotted it, I'd be escalating that and looking at making a referral. If you are sufficiently worried that the child's at risk of significant harm because of their excessive alcohol or excess alcohol. And actually, excess alcohol has become a massive issue in lockdown, certainly for those who are either struggling because they're furloughed, struggling because they've lost their jobs, or simply because they're struggling. Just we all are in a very, very strange place right now. So that level of alcohol intake and substance misuse have actually increased. And for the first time, I live in a relatively safe area. I'm in the middle of a triangle between three massive educational organisations. And for the first time, whilst I knew it was happening in and around the area in the early part of lockdown, I saw open dealing happening on the street because there was nowhere to hide with it. It was absolutely in your face. So it is happening all over the place. So just be aware of that. But if you're worried, then do something. Take that step and make that action. Amanda, that is absolutely fine. I think we are drawing to a close. Thank you all so much for being with me today. Tomorrow is our last session, and we're looking at what your responsibilities are. So come armed with your questions. Oh, I'm a fountain of love. Thank you. That's really sweet of you to say. You should come and join the membership. You get all of my knowledge then. You're very welcome, Jodie. Tomorrow, all about your responsibilities. So come armed with your questions. I will share a little bit, but we'll have a bit of an extended Q&A tomorrow because you're all working in such different areas. So we'll have a bit of an extended Q&A for that. And if you are really interested in continuing on working with me, and I would love to continue on working with you, then get in touch and we'll book a call in and we'll have a chat about how that can happen. And how you can come and join the membership or get on one of my other courses. So until tomorrow, stay safe, have a lovely afternoon, and I will see you tomorrow at